We're really cornering the market on forgotten, brightly colored movies from the mid-60s. That's a big market, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of interest?
Huge.
In this topic?
Yeah.
Right? How to succeed in business without really trying was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with those two Chinese guys at the beginning of the movie that are like, foreigners, right? It's Robin Hitchcock.
I am white. As will come up later in the episode.
And Camila Adams.
Hi.
That's a reference to 55 Days at Peking, our previous episode, which we gave a 32. That is our lowest rated movie of the 1960s.
Oh,
wow.
We haven't had that many. I feel like we've had a third of the movies we've done from the 60s in this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We haven't hit it that often, but that's solidly the lowest. A full, even Unsinkable Molly Brown, which we did not like, was a 45.
Yeah.
So to go back to not... You know how, like, you say you've never heard of a movie, and you probably have? Go back to having never heard of 55 Days at Peking. You're fine.
Yep.
You don't need this in your brain. We haven't gone far. We've gone a couple of years forward to How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. I've seen, I think, only High School Musical productions, that maybe one professional production of this on stage. I know what's it is, but I had nothing going in, and I got nothing coming out. Robin?
I think I mentioned on mic last week that I had believed in my heart that I saw a high school production of this, and around 10 minutes into the movie, I was like, there's no way that's true. And I, now that I think about it a little bit more, I think it was a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. I think that was me being like, old, long-titled comedic musicals. Yeah. Right.
By the way, your Letterboxd list is an incredibly massive list of movies with exceptionally, exceedingly, extraordinarily, enormously, fantastically, vastly, inordinately long titles. All the movies on Letterboxd with five or more words in their name.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Camila, anything?
It sounded like, I know for a fact that I'd never seen any sort of production of this, but it sounded familiar, the title slot. So I'd heard of it, maybe, but I've never seen anybody do anything about this in real life.
The other thing I came in knowing was that Daniel Radcliffe was in a Broadway revival of this, which I think was like one of his first post-Harry Potter things.
Oh, okay.
So
it was 2011. So
one of his first post-Harry Potter things. Mm-hmm. And watching this movie, I was like, oh, he must have crushed it this role.
Yeah. I was seeing like Jason Ritter.
Oh, yes.
As what the fuck is his
Ponty?
Name? Yes, thank you.
Finch. F-I-N-C-H.
Yes, okay. So, yeah, that was seeing that. And I also kind of felt like this dude was Jerry Lewis minus five.
Colin said exactly. He didn't say minus five, but he was like, this guy is Jerry Lewis-ish.
Yes, Jerry Lewis light.
Jerry Lewis.
That's better.
As you said accidentally. That was you, unintentionally. I wrote down, what are we doing here? Like a Jerry Lewis thing? Because it's... I don't really understand. What are we doing here?
Okay, I'm going to just jump right into the trailer because the beginning of the trailer, which you won't be able to hear in this podcast, is him making goofy faces. Trailer.
Of all the Broadway musical comedies that ever made the screen sing out, nothing succeeds like Succeed.
I believe in you.
A secretary is not nothing while Mikey pulls my string.
I play it the company way.
This book is all that I need. How to succeed.
The only motion picture that guarantees you a better position.
Mr. Finch will be starting out in our mailroom. Mr. Gatch is taking young Finch into his department as a junior executive.
Finch, I'm making you vice president in charge of advertising.
Vice president?
The motion picture that shows you how to take an all-day coffee break with lots of sugar. How to have a 50-week vacation with play.
There is a brotherhood of man.
Oh, aren't you proud to be?
Warning, see it before your boss does.
They really sold the trailer on more sex than you get out of the movie, didn't they?
Yeah. I think with Hedy LaRue, you're getting a lot of sex.
You're getting some.
I mean, if you're interested in women, at least, you're going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
It's very ba-ba-boom.
Yes.
Very ba-ba-boom for, and the 60s is what they were like given like hard. And admittedly, I walked out of the room a few times, so there was no like explicit anything even like remotely insinuating sex on screen.
Just double entendres.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
It's very butt focused for the era. Like there's butt talk, there's butt images. And it's 1967.
Yeah. So.
A lot of buttography as well.
Mm-hmm.
The look of this movie is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what it looked like to people watching it in 1967. Is that right?
Was there cocaine in the 60s?
I don't actually know.
Because the production design here is like, we're going to all do triple the amount of work than is necessary. In every shot, the way that it's painted, the sets, the stuff on the sets, everything is at 12 when 7 would have done.
The executive offices are fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But like, what I was thinking is, if you're watching this movie in 1967, the real world could not have actually looked like that, right? But it was in the style of the time.
Yeah, the style of the, yes, but I'm sure not as vibrant.
So is there a modern analog here? Like, the best I could think of was maybe, like, Empire Records, frankly, of, maybe. Like, we're doing the 90s, crank to 11.
Maybe. Barbie. Like the Real Housewives aesthetic, Craig. Okay. 11.
Would that one? No, because it's not set in the current time. I was thinking of Down with Love. Is that it with Renee Zellweger?
Right, but that is a period. Yeah, like we often see heightened reality in period pieces. Right. It feels like we don't see contemporaneous heightened reality like this very often. That might also be because we don't make movie musicals.
Well, would it be? I mean, even though I don't think his stuff is like. I don't know if we actually get an actual time period, but Wes Anderson?
Ooh, I like that comparison.
Well, In the Heights is kind of this.
In the Heights is very, it's 2020, oh my gosh, minus COVID.
Yeah, I mean, it's modern-ish. It might be,
sure.
It's certainly in the 21st century, and it's very storybook New York, you know, a very designed
I think
New
we're
York.
Talking about two different things. I think when you said Barbie, I was like, I don't get it. We're talking about two different things. You're talking about it looking like a fake reality.
Yes.
I'm talking about it looking like a period piece in the present.
Oh, yeah. Wes Anderson's a better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also, the other one I thought of was Ocean's 11.
Oh, that's okay. A good one.
Like the real world didn't look like that in 2001, but if you made a movie set in 2001, you'd make it look like that.
Right.
I was supposed to do the recap, wasn't I?
Yes, you were. It's a trend this year.
White man fails upward. Done.
I mean, yeah.
I
will let you get by with
that. Yeah, absolutely. That is acceptable.
No, let me try, because like odds are good that people are listening that have no idea what this is.
Sure.
So let me just hit the points that matter, which are not very many more than that. Say, there's a guy named Finch. He has a book about how to succeed in business. He waltzes in and gets a job, and then through charm and slight subterfuge, gets increasingly high-level jobs until he ends up as the vice president of advertising, which he didn't read far enough into the book to realize was a dead end. He has to come up with a campaign. It goes very, very badly. He's about to get fired, but then he reminds the chairman of the board that I don't know, people are important, and then everyone gets more jobs. Through the course of this, he falls in love with a girl named Rosemary, and they get together with relatively little interruption.
Yeah. That's
you covered it. Everything but Hedy LaRue, the best character.
Hedy LaRue is the best
way she flourishes in an office. Like
the great cinema walks.
Yeah.
When she turns to, like, bounce out of the... of Bigby's office.
I don't know how she does that with her butt. I genuinely don't. She's got individual gluteal control.
I'm confused about what were women's bodies doing in the 60s? Because when she rolls in the pirates in the pirate outfit.
Yeah.
Like I have seen like 60s shows and I've seen like the concave of it mm-hmm. and like seeing the rib cage and like that. And it's
but just, not when the top and the bottom.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's really just, I've never seen anything since the 60s on a real woman that looked like that.
Diet pills?
Diet pills? Diet pills? Oh.
Like, is that just what they were doing? Like, because I was just, like, wondering, like, yeah, what was the height? Like, what was the thing at that point in time?
I think everybody was doing a small amount of speed.
Because for the longest time, I was thinking, like, you know, it was just like, we're just sucking it in really well.
I do think they had some serious corsetry happening, at least in this film. Like,
well, but
yeah, no, I guess there are times, like, you're right, yeah, you're right.
And that's what I was thinking, too, like, for a long time, like, most of the time when I see that, and it's not bare belly, so I'm thinking, yeah, corset, whatever. But... like, I just don't understand.
No.
It's shocking.
Hey, who is that? I feel like you know.
I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea.
Maureen Arthur.
Good name.
Good names in this movie. This is an excellent list of character names.
Yeah.
Why don't we bring back the name Ponty? I don't remember what Ponty is short for. It's like Pont-Pierre or something like that. That's dumb.
Pontius?
I guess that's not going to happen. All right.
She didn't do a lot of stuff. She was just kind of a celebrity. Like
one
like,
of those.
She was someone who would show up and tell you the clues for where to find the treasure.
Or like she would be like, what is it? What is it? Sock it to him? What is that TV show?
It.
Yes.
Probably.
No, Love American Style.
She's not credited in Laugh It. She did 10 movies and like 6 TV spots. But was just kind of a Hollywood celebrity and, like, did work with Variety and, you know.
I really liked Schmitty? Was that or the with the pigtails?
Oh, pigtails.
Yeah.
Love her.
Yeah, she was my favorite.
I loved her. I loved Jonesy. Great. The love interest. Rosemary. I don't under... Yeah, like, she's got a great face.
Yeah.
She's from the Broadway show.
There you go.
Many of them are from that. Hey, you want some facts?
Yes, please.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying was released March 9th of 1967, went to number one on March 22nd, the sixth number one movie of that year. Like last week, we don't have week-by-week money data. This probably made about $6 million. That was just outside the top 10 for the year. 10th was Paul Newman in Hombre at $6.5 million. Dirty Dozen was in first with $18.2 million. So this was considered a bit of a financial disappointment. The critics liked it. It won 4 weeks. It stayed there for most things did, stuck around at this point.
That's probably why we haven't drawn so much from the 60s. Right. Yeah,
there's just fewer total nomias. Ended a long on and off run from The Bible in the beginning.
Never heard of it.
Like epic of the Book of Genesis.
Cool.
Yeah. That was winning weekends throughout early 1967. This stopped that. It was dethroned by A Man for All Seasons. Things were different.
Yeah.
When A Man for All Seasons could be the number one movie in America.
Yeah.
That's not just there aren't that many movies. Like, no. I don't know. Have you seen A Man for All Seasons?
I sure have. I actually watched it on the Cartoon TV in high school.
Oh.
And then somebody passed around a, like, mean, fatphobic drawing of Cardinal Wolsey, who I believe was played by Orson Welles. And I remember getting so mad that I, like, interrupted the movie to be like, who did this?
You are correct. It was Orson Welles. And I have there never heard of this movie.
I was like, you don't understand what this man did for cinema.
That was Man for All Seasons was a big Oscar winner.
Best picture, best director, et cetera, best actor.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, always under that title, starts as a book in 1952.
Like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Yes.
Becoming a movie.
Yes. Or He's Just Not That Into You.
Yes. Very good.
But Shepherd Mead is the name of the writer. It was basically a parody. Okay. It was a humor book. It was a, this is what self-help books sound like, but we're making fun of office culture, which was, you know, a relatively new phenomenon in 1952. That was made into a musical by Frank Lesser. Also wrote Guys and Dolls, wrote a lot of hit songs, and won the Academy Award for Best Original Song for Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh, God. Oh,
the musical was a big hit. More than 1,400 performances, 7 Tonys. One of them was Best Musical. One of them was Best Actor for Robert Morse, who returned for the movie. A good number of people jumped from the musical, the Broadway musical, to the film.
Do you want to know what I wrote in my notes about Robert Morse? It's so mean. He has a fifth row face. I know, that's so mean.
He kind of does, though. Like, yeah. It's hard to take when the secretaries are fawning over him. I'm like,
this guy?
But no,
I'm looking around and I know he doesn't have a lot of stiff competition, but
they pointed it out when they first met him, like, he's a lost puppy. Like, that's why.
Yeah, they want to feed him soup.
Yeah, it wasn't like, you know, one of my friends back home used to call them pets. Oh. Yeah. I just want to take him home for a good scrubbing.
Yep.
Bob Fosse did most of the choreography for the Broadway musical, a lot of which transferred. There was weird credit stuff. A young guy was hired to do the choreography and was immediately in over his head. he did a number or two and Fosse did the rest of it, but Fosse didn't want to steal this guy's thunder. So they have, is a really weird credit on it. It's like original stagings by Bob Fosse or something.
So for the
weird
film, Fosse did the
This is on the stage show, most of which transferred straight to the movie, like West Side Story.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Fosse was warming up. There were two or three moments of choreography during the secretary song, which I hated, but I loved when they were all choreography. Yeah, that was such good choreography. Yeah. And then a couple things during Brotherhood of Man, which is the only song in this that I had ever heard before in my life. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the choreography is do a twirl and make a face.
Yeah.
Right. Which I'm here for.
Okay.
There was a big revival in 1995.
With Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick and Megan Mullally.
I remember seeing TV ads for this.
When they left, it was John Stamos and Sarah Jessica Parker. And for a while, Matthew Broderick came back so he could do this with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Gotcha.
Adore.
Oh, that's so coop.
Are they still together?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. I think so. And then had a big national tour with Ralph Macchio in the lead role. Hey. So if you had been going to the Broadway series, you would have seen the Karate Kid in this part.
That's a, butters.
Revived again in 2011, as you said, with Daniel Radcliffe as Finch and John Larroquette as Bigby.
Is there something?
I don't think he's much of a singer, though.
Daniel Radcliffe?
Macchio.
Oh, couldn't tell you.
Radcliffe is.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah.
The musical won the Pulitzer Prize for drama.
What?
I beg your pardon.
That award.
What was going on that year?
I don't.
Nobody's doing anything.
That's the thing. They don't have to give it. That's the thing with the Pulitzer. There's there's 20 years where they're no winner this year.
Really?
They've given this award 100, 105 times. Oh. It's almost always a play. There's only 10 musicals ever to win that award. And this is one of them.
Wow.
And it's what? It is a weird list. Here's any guesses? Musicals to win the Pulitzer Prize for drama?
West Side Story.
For drama. No.
Drama is just production. It's not it has to not be a comedy. Fiddler on the Roof.
Nope.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Okay. I'm done.
That's all Cats. I don't know.
In order of The I Sing, which is a Gershwin thing.
Nope.
South Pacific.
Okay.
The one I've truly never heard of, Fiorello, exclamation point.
Nope. I just was talking to Megan Etzel. About, she had at bar trivia, name the best musical Tony nominees that have an exclamation point at the end. Oh. And she did very poorly, and she was like, this is my greatest shame of all.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, A Chorus Line, Sunday in the Park with George, which is another weird one. Rent, Next to Normal, yeah. Hamilton, and A Strange Loop from 2020. So 10 times in about 115 years.
And this?
And this is one of them.
I do have to say, I was browsing Letterboxd yesterday, and like a lot of people give this 5 or 4, 4.5 stars and are like, this is what a movie musical should be. And I'm like, this is... Sean's made fun of me in the past for saying I don't like musicals with no evidence, right. But like, this is what I'm talking about.
But I think this isn't very good. I have no idea what score I'm going to give this. It's like the elements are, this is ingredients that have not yet become soup. Like, okay, the cast is filled with this production design, couple of the songs. I have no reaction to it. Was I just half watching or?
I don't hate that I saw it.
Yeah. Same. So, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, exactly. I never need to watch it again.
Exactly.
No. I will never revisit any of the music, any of the songs from it. So yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. It's just kind of like, as far as musicals go, and I'm not like, I'm with Robin, it's like musicals, whatever. They really have to like kick it into gear for me to be like, fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like,
you mentioned when we talked about West Side Story, the moment when they transition from dialogue to music, this movie has some of the most egregious pregnant pause.
Yes. Ah! You know what I
mean? But you almost, there's a few times when I think you hear them getting their note. Like it's built into the score where it's like pause. Ding. Thing with the business stuff. And it's like, you know, you could cut that out, right? Despite a Pulitzer and all those Tonys, this movie received no nominations. Expensive baubles for this whatsoever. Finally, Robert Morse, long career.
He's on Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Which is filmed on the same set.
Was it?
No.
Oh, God.
No. But could have been.
Yeah.
What's his name? Weiner? Matthew Weiner? Basically gave him that part because of this.
That makes sense.
That's cute. Like it.
Finch has climbed to the top of the ladder and is still there.
And, you know, also weird thing, Robert Morse died April 20th.
On Monday?
That was on 2022. Pause. But.
The 4-year anniversary of Robert Morse's death.
I was like, Tony!
Stop! No. He continued acting throughout his life. He was on Broadway at like age 85.
Oh, good for him.
And then when he died 4 years ago, not this week. He was 90. He basically hadn't stopped working.
Good for him.
Tony for this, another Tony, and then an Emmy for a one-man show about Truman Capote about 20 years before.
That sounds kind of fun.
Hoffman. Yeah, it was like a Truman stands on stage and talks to you, and then they made that into a movie of the week kind of thing.
Cool.
And he got multiple awards for that. So good run for him.
What you're asking, Robin, what was Ponty short for? It's a Pierrepont.
Pierrepont. There you go.
Name J. Pierrepont Finch.
Seems a little French for modern sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The songs, I think it needed more. Like they cut out a lot of songs, and it has that thing where sometimes there's 25 minutes between songs.
Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff in between felt flat to me.
It's very 60s sitcom-y.
Yeah. It's the whole thing is absurd, but it's like leaning into the corporate absurdity of it all. So therefore, yes, there probably should have been more songs to kind of like help bolster that absurdity.
But some of the songs that made it in aren't all that strong. Like I
none
can't
of them are. Yeah,
believe like, we spent all that time on the pretend Ivy League fight song.
Oh, that was catchy. I don't know.
Okay. I hated the secretary song as a former and possibly again secretary, even though it's supposed to be saying don't harass your secretaries. Isn't it kind of fun to harass your secretaries?
Like,
yes.
Yeah, like, don't Camila do just it, winked. Wink.
Yeah.
I was about to say, there's a pretty don't do it.
I turned to Colin like 5 times and said, I hate this. But it had the best choreography in the whole movie, so that's troubling.
Yeah.
No, there's Yeah, that's not... When I read the list of songs, I think the problem is the one that's catchy is a ballad from Rosemary about how she wants to be a housewife. So it's a better song, but it's like, we are already...
Lacey.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know whether or not to get into the politics of this, because it's like... Whatever, the 60s. At least there are women in the movie, I guess.
A lot of women, actually. Yeah. And I, like I said, I love the character Jonesy. I feel like that was such a good representation of the lady who is actually in charge.
Right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But everyone likes her.
Right.
Everyone likes her, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, that was good. She could have been the quote-unquote villain.
Yes.
This whole thing, and she was not. My big question is Punt like actually just or is he fucking sociopath?
Yes. I think he is a goof who, when he gathers his druthers, becomes a sociopath.
Well, we just did this with
Michael J. Fox. Right.
The Secret of My Success.
For a Hemplo. It's the same.
Yes. Did they, like, I kind of low-key feel like they should have credited someone for this with The Secret of My Success.
Yes, because, Secret of My Success takes itself more seriously than this movie does. And at least J. Fox's character actually does some work.
Yeah.
This guy is not doing anything.
The only time he ever does anything, he completely biffs it.
Right.
Vincent Canby, writing in the New York Times, felt Secret of My Success is in the long shadow of Frank Lesser's classic musical, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
There
but they
go.
Certainly okay. didn't, like...
Pay anyone.
No. Yeah. Right. Definitely not.
All right.
What the hell is up with that I Believe in You sequence from Rosemary where nobody moves and they don't cut the entire time? It's like they're performing for a Ring doorbell. Like with all of this frenetic energy, they're like, this one, nothing. Statues will sing to you. What?
Interesting.
Was it that?
I mean, that was one of the ones I left the room in. Like she started making these really weird faces, and
that's what gets a reprise. It's like I don't care. But I will say, when they walked into that restroom, I was like, oh, time for a musical number.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's like I'm pretty sure. Like, I've never actually seen an executive's washroom, but I'm pretty sure they don't look like that.
No. That's a set for a musical number, right. And not an actual bathroom.
Nothing in this movie looks like reality. Sets. No. Human women, teeth, nothing in this movie.
But frankly, complimentary.
Well, certainly.
And I think it does a good job. And I'm pretty sure it was like in the first like 10 minutes or so when Ponty, I keep wanting to call him Monty, comes into the place. And is it a musical number, or is he just talking to somebody and then everything else stops? All the action around him stops, and then he's still interacting with himself or with one other person or something?
I'm not sure.
Either way. I think it happens very early in the movie, and I think that's a nice way to be like, hey, everything you see from here on out is just going to be absurd.
I think I know when it is. It's when the secretaries are, like, grooming themselves, and, like, somebody puts on, like, a bonnet dryer at her desk.
Right.
I loved that sequence.
I was so confused. I was like, what actually was going on in the 60s?
Not that is the thing, right? It's a heightened reality.
The more they did heightened reality, the more I liked it.
Yeah.
Like, I love that whip pan to the guillotine. And
that was really good.
Like, dumping the bag of cigarette ashes around and then putting his face in them. Like, that stuff was good.
Oh, my God. The bag of cigarette ashes. Mm-hmm. That is probably my favorite bit in the entire movie. It's so much.
is Morse, what's his name? Robert Morse. Can he sing? Because I'm not convinced.
He won a Tony.
I don't know if it's like, you know who I want to listen to? Robert Morse. Like, no, it's just he's passable for this role.
But the vibrato was intense.
I believe in you.
Every time he held a note. Mm-hmm. It was like you were holding him by his shoulders and shaking him.
There is a brotherhood of man.
It was just a little much. I'm just very conflicted over whether or not this is a good movie. I don't know.
I think this is a good movie if you like this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, it's pretty fine.
Right.
I'm checking my notes. Theater. I've got what's nepotism? That's when your nephew's a damn poop.
There were some good turns of phrase.
Hedy LaRue, what was your last position? And she winks.
I love that. I loved it. And no, it made me good. Sad, but I loved it.
I laughed so, like, that's the thing. I laughed out loud 10 times during this movie. Yeah. And I'm an easy laugher, but like, it's, I can't give a low score to a movie that made me laugh this much, even though I did not particularly care for it.
It's crazy to me that the other movies that came out the same year, The Graduate, Bonnie and Clyde, In the Heat of the Night, Cool Hand Luke, like what?
Wow. Like New Hollywood was taking hold. But so what's that Mark Harris book where he looks at the 1967 Best Picture nominees? Mm. And he's basically like, so we have three movies from the beginnings of New Hollywood, an old fashioned serious Hollywood movie, and Dr. Fucking Doolittle. Right? And it's, I've never actually read that book because I famously don't read. But like, this was a real hinge point in American cinema. And I think that this is a relic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's we don't have time for me to get into my feelings about work and labor, but like,
no, we do not. I have so much to say about Michael.
Yeah, it's all I'll say is, like with Secret of My Success, the focus on career, work, ladder, even though it was tongue in cheek, just made it. This is the second show in a row where we have a movie where like I'm not really rooting for anybody.
Mm. Right?
Maybe Hedy.
I do, Jonesy. Right. I'm rooting for Jonesy and Hedy. Yep.
I did like that we never really find, like, never tell us what this company does.
What the fuck's make. A witch?
Right.
There are laughs. There are laughs. Yeah. I don't, should we rate it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think I talked myself into 60, but I had written down plus three for Hedy's Tale of Two Cities quote. So 63.
I'm at 60.
What did I write? I put 64.
Oh,
well, I'm surprised I'm lowest.
We agree. 62 and a third.
If you like this kind of thing,
yes,
seek this out. It's on Prime right now.
Very specific.
Yeah.
And Tony, something from, I don't know, a year when at least one of us was alive this time, please. We need to give the listeners something familiar. Camila has prepared a very interesting bingo card,
which we don't understand, so explain it to us.
Well, it's real simple, actually, but you know, I just wiped the slate clean, decided to do something different this time. We are focusing on the actors, and all I did was looked at our I did the random numbers thing.
Mm-hmm.
And every time whatever number I picked, that's the movie off of our list that I picked, and then I picked whoever was the top billed person in that film.
I was like, how did Sandra D, because of Imitation of Life?
No, I forget which movie it was, but no, yeah.
I was like, how'd she make it into this?
Yeah, I forget which movie it was, but still. So yeah, so we've got people like Shirley MacLaine to Gal Gadot to...
Gadot. It's okay. You don't need to know how to pronounce her name. She knows who she is.
From James Earl Jones to Megan Fox. So it's just, it's rough. It's a rough list.
Yeah.
But also, might be Gadot. It has a pronounced T.
Gadot. 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 Gadot.
I don't know. I this is exciting, and I don't know how I'm going to win.
Yeah, I know. It's.
Can I make a proposal?
What?
If no one gets a bingo by August, can we refresh?
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
Or you know what?
This is like crazy specific.
Or you know what? Double up. Just add an extra actor to each square.
Ooh.
Where it would be, you know, Will Smith or Hulk Hogan. I don't know why that's what I went to.
I was going to say, is Hulk Hogan
Does Hulk no. Hogan have a nomia? Rocky 3, right? Rocky 3 had to be a number one movie in America.
I do want to call out one of the squares is David Warner, who we had a run last year where David Warner was threatening to take Tony Goldwyn's crown.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't include any movies that we had already seen. So this is all still movies that are still... waiting to be got.
Does Dan Castellaneta have a second number one, or did you land on the Simpsons movie?
Simpsons movie.
Okay, all right. I figured it had to be. All right.
I'm surprised we haven't landed on yet.
We got.
Listen, there's 1,500 movies on our list, right? It's a 1 in 1,500 shot.
Here's what I would also propose. We count it even if we veto it.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
If today we land on a Star Trek and I'm like, we've had enough, but.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Okay, but today, nothing.
All right.
Shirley MacLaine wasn't standing in the background anywhere.
It was her birthday yesterday.
Mm, that counts too. No, let's not expand. Yep. Nothing right now. That brings us to You Can't Handle the Truth. And it's a very special occasion because we all saw a movie together. Yay! For the third time.
Yes.
What's the one? It's Gladiator 2. 2.
Wicked for Good. Wicked for this good. Is the first time we've seen a non-sequel together.
Yeah. Great.
As everything is all fresh to it. Well, for the most part, the whole thing is all fresh.
Hey, Editing Robin here. We've reached the point in the episode where we're going to talk about Michael, the new Michael Jackson biopic. This will involve discussion of child abuse, including sexual abuse of children. If that's going to be painful for you, please stop listening here or fast forward about 25 minutes where this conversation concludes. Also, Camila and Sean asked me to make it clear that we do not intend to defend Michael Jackson in any way, even as we attempt to have a nuanced conversation about this movie. All right, back to the episode.
Camila, please start. This was your most anticipated movie of the year.
I know our Letterboxd scores. Let's descend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's start at the top.
Oh, okay.
With Camila.
All right. So, yes, I was very excited going in to see this. I don't know. It's very complicated.
There's no way to talk about this movie without having a heavy sigh somewhere.
Yeah.
In
right.
It.
Yeah. It's all very complicated. I feel like it hits different. For one, the level of fan that you are, mm-hmm. obviously. Two, if you were alive and actually witnessed some of the highlights from the movie in real time, like the Grammy moonwalking for the first time, I remember.
You saw that?
Yeah, I remember seeing that for the first time and the adults in the room like losing their minds. And then the next day, everybody in school is trying to do the moonwalk. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, I don't know how much of my enjoyment of the movie is just pure nostalgia and just everything that it always meant to me, how every fucking song has a memory connected to it for me, a personal memory. I don't know who this is actually made for.
You.
You know? Yeah, so that's what I'm assuming because, yeah. You know, because we keep it real fucking even kill. You know, I thought it was weird. Some of the things, some of the directorial choices and some of the editing choices, like when we meet and I don't even know who this was in real life, but your now boyfriend.
Miles Teller, yes. How dare you? How dare you? I say, Miles Teller, first time I've ever found him attractive, and you call him my boyfriend? This man's been annoying me since 2015.
I know. Your girl, same. But also, like, somebody...
John Branca is the name of that person who is an executive producer on the film, which is why Miles Teller plays him.
Which, oddly enough, like, you may have found him attractive because Dan was like, is John Cusack in this movie? He kind of looks like John Cusack in this movie.
Does.
Oh my God, Dan's so right.
Yes. Okay, so back to like that moment where they meet each other, it's like there's a lot of weird staring and at each other between Michael and him.
Because the executive producer was like, please make me an important character in this story.
But also, even when watching Michael Jackson, it all
when can I'm gonna bleep that, by the way, okay. Because apparently I've read several other reviews that are like, a cameo I will not spoil. I know we'll talk about it a little bit more in a second, sorry, go back.
But some of it felt like more like the longing looks and the glances and the way, like the very soft lens, it felt like we were looking at it. It felt like a love affair kind of thing. Or mm-hmm. with that character looking down, it's like, oh, I'm gonna make so much fucking money. Like, that's, you know, it's just so, I don't know. I think the narrative, the overall narrative of the film, I'm not sure where it was supposed to land. It felt a little bit hollow all over the place.
Hollow kinda. Is a word I keep using talking about yeah. this movie.
But I had a great time.
Yeah.
And I appreciate ending where they did. I don't want a sequel. We know what happens. Like, we know where this train goes.
Especially
heavy sigh.
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is where we get into it, but
we have to get into it.
It's the way that the right to make a movie about a public figure works. Mm. It is actually impossible to make a narrative movie about Michael Jackson or anyone else that famous mm-hmm. that's devoid of influence from their estate.
Right.
At least in this,
brothers or executive producers?
I guess
four. All the surviving brothers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All the surviving brothers. I'm basing that on what they said on NPR. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Legally.
Is there a dead brother?
Yeah, Tito.
Oh, there you go.
Tito, right. Jermaine, Randy, Jackie.
Okay.
Marlon.
So you can do a documentary, and it's been done, but legally, you are not allowed to make the narrative version that is unflinching, right? Mm. So do you want the one that it, do you want like a 2-hour movie that like goes like he was just a victim and everybody was bullshit and then he died? Like, is that a movie you want to see?
No, and I don't know if like, I don't know if him being a victim, I don't know if the movie is calling him a victim per se. And yes, and but we also all knew what that he had a tumultuous relationship with his father, as did all of the other kids.
I do think that they show him being physically and emotionally abused, and which he was. Everyone knows this, right? But what troubles me so much is that Michael's abuse is allowed to be discussed, and the abuse that Michael allegedly, but we know did, inflict on others is not allowed to be discussed.
Interesting, yeah.
And like the thing I keep coming back to is I'm like getting teared up because like this is just so painful and horrible.
Yeah.
Is that the way society deals with sexual abuse of children is pretending that it doesn't happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And this movie pretends that that never happened.
Yeah. Right.
And I feel like even without any explicit content, if you are a survivor and you see this movie, you will be re-traumatized by the pretend world it lives in, where Michael Jackson never hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm. Right. No.
Camila and I were talking, or the three of us were talking before, and Camila was saying, like, I don't know how I feel about the accusations. And, like, the thing that I keep coming back to is I'm like, it is incredibly rare for people to make false accusations of sexual abuse.
Right, right.
But the two times it actually happens are white people trying to ruin the life of a black person or people weaponizing a child in a custody dispute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in the 1993 accusation, which is the one that they allegedly were going to cover, but were legally barred from doing so on the terms of the settlement with the victim or his family, both of those things apply.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that were the only case, I might be more willing to go, maybe it didn't happen. But because there are so many accusers, I'm like, I think it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with the privilege to find this debate interesting because I'm not personally affected by it. I've found the varying reactions to this very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Based on, I hate to use a silly phrase, but it actually applies. Michael Jackson is Schrodinger's pedophile. We're talking about someone who's not with us anymore. There can and will never be hard evidence. Mm-hmm. There's so many people, but there's so many changing stories, which is natural and which is what happens with abuse. All of I'm saying is there's enough of a fog of war around this guy that you could convince yourself, I'm pretty sure he is, but none of us will ever know that as a matter of fact.
Right.
So part of my reaction is, that being the case, the story of Michael Jackson, the performer, is still interesting.
Right.
And so if you're going to have a Queen movie and an Elton John movie and an Amy Winehouse movie, and if this is a genre of movie now, this is a very interesting subject for that genre of movie. On the other hand, basically what Robin is saying, what a weird time to... I don't think, you know, I find it pithy when people are like, we're celebrating Michael Jackson. No, not I. What I fundamentally disagree with is every time a movie is about someone, that's giving them an award. There's plenty of movies about bad people.
But didn't you watch this movie? Don't you think that's what this movie is doing?
Celebrating Michael?
I think this movie makes Michael Jackson seem like, which is
tortured,
part of his story.
Tortured genius.
Exactly. Which like, I don't think he was not. It's the thing. He was a genius. He was one of the greatest performers of all time. He's an icon.
Right.
And he matters. And I agree with you that making a movie about him makes so much sense until you think about how painful and harmful it is to some of the most victimized people in the world.
And I'm not talking, I'm not, I mean, yes, his victims, but I'm not talking about his victims. I'm talking about anyone who has been through anything like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about.
You
know, how many thousands of people have been through something like that, believe that Michael is an abuser and are walking around with these. I read
this movie's going to make $1 billion.
I read an article about new accusations, and the article was broken up with automated ads for this movie. So it's, I kind of hate the discourse because
say more.
When I talked about this on the radio and basically said, if you want to see this, I'm not mad at you. If you don't want to see this, I'm not mad at you.
And actually, that is how I feel. Right. I got to be clear, and I'll have more to say about that in a second, but keep going.
It's a pretty good movie, which I also think it's a pretty good movie, and I think that a lot of critics were shitting on it just because.
Yes, right. Yes. Okay, more to say on that.
Put a pin in that. Too many points. But when I was giving a qualified good review on the radio, somebody tweeted at me like, thank you for being one of the fair ones. And I looked at his Twitter and it was like 50 posts about how Michael Jackson is a god, you know? And I hate that just as much as slightly less than I hate the slightly more than I hate the knee jerk. Well, fuck him. Why does this movie exist?
Right.
There's a lot of good reasons for this movie to exist. And the movie that you are saying you want is impossible and you don't want.
Also, right. I first read this article that was talking about how the original script began with the 1993 accusation and was like, that was like the frame story. And I think they even shot material from it, and they had to do reshoots to make a new movie that excised the controversy altogether because of the terms of the settlement.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't like this. This feels like they're trying to have it both ways. This feels like they're trying to make a movie that's just like Michael Jackson icon, make $1 billion, and also be like, but we wanted to be honest and we couldn't because of that rude victim's terms of his rude settlement. Now I know the director, Pittsburgh's own Antoine Fuqua, thinks they were liars. He said the accusers says people do some nasty things for money. Pregnant pause.
Yeah.
That's me like digesting my bad feelings.
No, that was me going like, should you say those things into a microphone that you're thinking right now? No, you shouldn't. Moving on.
Exactly. And I would have hated to watch the movie that he wanted to direct that made this victim out to be a villain.
Yeah.
That would have been disgusting.
Right.
Even more so than the product we have right here. Did I cut anyone off? Does anyone have something to say right now?
What did we put a pin in?
Well, what I really want to say, which I think is an incredibly important lens through it to view this movie, is that black people and white people completely differently engage with Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And as a white person, I mentioned this would come back. I don't feel 100% comfortable being like, here's my final word on Michael 2026. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important to like look to what black critics are doing. And I say that, you know, you were like, I feel like some people are panning this more than it deserves because of the controversy. Like, I really liked Robert Daniels' review on RogerEbert.com, which is an absolute pan and is absolutely describing a movie worse than the movie that I felt I watched. But I do think that he interacts with the place that Michael Jackson had in black culture in a way that white people just don't get. They just do not understand. And like, when we first got the invite to this screening, I was out to dinner with Colin and I was like, I'm gonna go see Michael next week. And our server, who's a black guy, like knocked on the table and was like, when's that coming out? And I was literally about to say, and I'm conflicted.
Right,
but I was
right.
Like, oh, April 23rd.
Yeah. Where is they did a musical. There was MJ the Musical.
Which was a huge fucking success and tours.
Right.
And the Vegas Cirque du Soleil show.
But it was
came after Leaving Neverland.
But it was also like really specific time periods.
Mm.
Like the musical was about his creative process during the 1992 Dangerous World Tour.
Period.
That's what we were talking about. That's what we were covering. That's what I was hoping for more. What I want, like, and yes, we saw it in This Is It, but we were all,
which I've never seen.
We were all still very fucking raw at that time. Like, I was sobbing through that fucking thing. But like, I wanted more of the creative process of what was going on. If we're going to do a movie about Michael Jackson and just like completely ignore, quote unquote, all of the accusations and all of his victims, alleged victims.
the way you hit that thing, the second
boom.
You said
the boom on the
ignore
mic,
ignore all of the accusations. Boom. Go on.
And just like focus in what we're, what eventually it was like, it seems like what they had to do half-heartedly or reluctantly is and turn it inward and towards who Michael Jackson was. But it still just felt a little, just kind of scattered. Because even like watching Coleman Domingo and Nia Long were on the Today Show.
Great to see Nia Long.
Yeah, right?
And they were both great in the movie.
Yes, they were.
You know
were.
What? I didn't really like Coleman Domingo, but I think I was distracted by all the business on his face. You
know what? If I didn't know it was Coleman Domingo, I would not have known that was Coleman Domingo.
You would have recognized his voice.
His voice, probably. Yeah. But it would have been bugging me for like the first hour. Where do I know that voice? But like even watching them talk about this movie on the Today Show, it's almost like they weren't exactly sure.
Yeah.
Like they were given like different talking points to talk about. And just so, yeah. It just seems like there was one clear vision when he started this project, and then other things happened. Things that he could not do happened and whatever. And so he had to pivot along the way. And it's apparent that there was a pivot at some point, like the final product. So I don't know. I'm just like, it's just fucking crazy. Long story short, we didn't need it.
No.
Like, you know, as much as I enjoyed watching it, we didn't need it.
Did we learn anything about Michael Jackson?
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, that's not true. I didn't know the vitiligo was real.
And even
that's what I said when we walked out. I was like, wait, did he actually? I thought he just fucked with his skin and the vitiligo was a cover story.
To this day, it's still one of the question marks to me. Like, is it, like, was it? And yeah, you said that you, the coroner's report.
The autopsy confirmed vitiligo.
Yeah. So.
I always believed that.
No.
I don't know what that says about me. I never didn't believe that.
The problem is you cannot have a fucking pet monkey, have a place called Neverland, walk around like with looking like a pirate and actually looking like you're from Neverland and just like all of this other weird shit like on top of that and be like, oh yeah, by the way, I've got this disease. Nobody's going to believe it.
Yeah.
No one's, everyone's just going to be like, no,
and
dude.
Continuing to change your nose, right. Which I will say the best Letterboxd review of this is Bohee, Me and Rhapsody. Right. And this movie is so bizarrely similar to Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Like, it starts with the backstage hop, hype up. It ends with an iconic performance.
Right.
The aforementioned bleeped out cameo.
Right. Which I had to double check. I was like, is this supposed to be the same person? Because that would be dope. It's not. But that would have been dope if it was supposed to be the same person.
That would have been dope. And then one of the things is a really strong central performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You go back to listen to our Bohemian Rhapsody episode. I'll say once again, it's not what you think. A really strong central performance that is somewhat detracted by a strange choice made. Well, not a strange choice. I really don't know what they could have done otherwise. But he's got a CGI nose for, I think, the entire movie.
Really?
I looked at his face after and I was like, I don't think we saw that nose. I don't think we saw that nose. So he has the center of his face is CGI for the entire movie. And like, I'd love to see backstage, like, did he have dots on it or what? If you accept the nose or it varies throughout the movie how convincing the nose is. He's so fucking good.
Yeah,
he is. Like we were saying as we walked out, like the fact that he doesn't embarrass himself is in itself an incredible feat.
It's crazy because he's not doing, and it's just, it's what you would expect from anybody who actually grew up and saw this person.
Yeah.
Like, this is my uncle. You know, he's not doing a Michael Jackson impression.
No.
Like, he's just being Michael. He's being Michael.
And I think it shows so much love. And I do think it shows a lot of love for his uncle, which, like, I don't want to begrudge him no matter what I think about his uncle as a person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it shows so much love for his fans, for his place in the culture, and also just generally for the business of show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, if this kid tours, I'm going. I'm not conflicted there.
Yeah,
I got no problem with you.
But it's not him singing. Do you want to see him tour lip syncing, which I'm fine with?
Yeah, I'm totally good with that.
Yeah, okay.
It's the most Your Mileage May Vary film we've ever talked about.
Yeah.
Literally that. And like Sean said, this is one of those things where I'm like, at the end of the day, I find this movie somewhat repugnant, and yet I don't begrudge anyone for liking it.
No. And
it's easy to like. On NPR, they called it seductive. And I'm like, yes, you nailed it.
It's mainly the nostalgia of it all.
Yes. And that's, again.
And great fucking music.
Yeah.
Setting everything aside. Hit that little thing. The point of this genre is to get us to watch great recreations of iconic performances on a great big screen with real loudspeakers.
Yeah.
So it works.
Yeah.
That's why we go to a big budget Hollywood biopic, to see the music on the screen.
Exactly. And I never got a chance to see Michael live.
No.
Right. So
this was the closest.
Didn't you always kind of assume you would?
All the spectacle that it was, I was like, never in my never in my life did I picture myself being at a Michael Jackson
concert. Are you more of an intimate venue concert person?
Now I am, absolutely. Okay. But I think I kind of was from the get-go, because I think I was kind of spoiled excuse me, from the time like the 90s, like so many good acts were coming into like these little clubs, and I lived like an hour from Detroit.
Nice.
So, and there was a point where I lived like right in like maybe a couple minutes from Detroit too. So I was kind of spoiled, like, oh, I've seen like so-and-so, what was it? Space Hog or something. Like, it
was, in like, the meantime.
Right. Yeah. Like Cypress Hill at the whatever.
Amazing.
And so like, yeah.
No, that's one of the weird things too. There aren't really tours. Like Bad's the only one that went beginning to end. The History World Tour did and didn't play the United States.
Yeah, there was a point where he
played Honolulu only.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he was doing like Estonia and selling out, but there was enough
trouble. Do you know that the reason that you can't watch Leaving Neverland right now is because HBO, which produced that documentary, played one of his world tour concerts, I want to say Live at Budapest, and said, I can't believe I just said that correctly, or, you know, as correctly as an American can say it. They had a non-disparagement clause. That is why you can't watch Leaving Neverland without pirating it until 2029.
Wait, what?
So because HBO produced a documentary about Michael Jackson abusing two people.
That.
I never watched it because I was like, I'm good. I believe them. You know what I mean? I was like,
one of them was Wayne Robeson, though, and that was like,
I don't know who that is.
He was the supposedly he's the one that Britney Spears cheated on Justin Timberlake with. He was he was a choreographer.
Oh, okay.
For a lot of the boy band, a lot of those early 2000s music videos and
stuff.
Oh,
interesting.
And so that in itself brings a question mark into the accusations.
Interesting.
Him as a person.
Okay. See, this is something I know nothing about.
Right. But anyway, you were saying like.
So what I'm saying is that
to
they
be continued
aired
off mic. You don't get this conversation, listeners.
What I was saying is that they aired the documentary, and then Michael Jackson's estate, led by Miles Teller, was like, no, 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 no. HBO, you signed a contract in 1990s that said you can't disparage Michael Jackson. And so they were like, we are erasing it from the face of the earth until it reverts to the director in 2029.
Wow.
Also, the director has an incendiary interview in The Hollywood Reporter, which I highly recommend, where it's like, what did you learn over the course of directing this? And he says, I learned Michael Jackson fucked little boys, period.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's again, I. Look, it's not important what I think.
Right.
I think there's a lot of smoke for there to be no fire. That's all that's as close as I'm saying. But that's not a thing for a documentarian to say.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's not journalism anymore.
Documentaries are not necessarily journalism.
That's true. That's true.
They're journalism and arts. Kiss.
So see the movie if you want to. Don't if you don't. And maybe leave it at that.
Yeah.
I again, with just white people.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of white people are being really cavalier, throwing this into the garbage heap in a way that they don't for the white predators that they love.
Mm-hmm.
Shmoody Schmallin.
Mm-hmm.
Woody Allen.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Like, fuck, I feel like there are white people out there who are judging people for seeing the Michael movie, who will happily watch Annie Hall and maybe voted for Trump.
Well, and I remember saying this to you probably 10 years ago. Anyone who does not say that they weigh the impact of the art and the creation and its importance to them when considering whether to engage with controversial figures is lying. Because I think, and I remember the example I gave you, you don't have to wonder whether or not you're going to watch a Brett Ratner movie again. But you have to wonder whether or not you're going to watch a Woody Allen movie again.
Right.
None of us.
When he dies, I will.
Yeah. None of us are here going, I really want a Gary Glitter documentary. Like, right. But because it's Michael Jackson, there is importance to art, and a lot of it is made by bad people.
Yeah.
It really sucks that there's so much Miramax and like the Weinstein brothers. Like shit, every time I see it, I'm like, every movie that I watch.
Yes, opening credits have these bombs planted.
I think I said this on the show. A bunch of us did Inglourious Basterds in 35 millimeter at Row House. And it was their first, this was the night they were trying their new 35
millimeter
projector.
I was just going to say, Row House had a 30, okay.
They've got a 35 projector and they're building they're working on the 70 millimeter projector. Wow. Right now. Okay. This was the night they were like, we think we got it working. And like, there was a little technical difficulty at first. And then when it flickered on, everyone cheered. And then the first image was the Weinstein Company logo. And everyone simultaneously went,
Oops.
Sorry.
And again, going back to just the forgiveness we give, like I think all the time about the standing ovation for Roman Polanski when he won Best Director in 2003, Meryl stood up. Mm-hmm. Meryl stood up. But you know who else stood up? Harvey Weinstein.
It's muddy waters.
Yep.
And that's why I'm almost, but not quite, equally bothered by the guy tweeting me to say Michael's perfect and the people saying, well, fuck this movie reflexively. Like the one thing you can't be is definitive.
If you want to defend Michael, please read the Wikipedia pages about all of this because they are written by someone who truly believes he's innocent, but is a Wikipedia editor.
So,
if you do not want to believe this but live in reality, that's where I direct you.
How long have we been here?
I was just going to say, we probably talked about Michael more than we talked about how to succeed in business without really trying, but you know what? I'm fine with it. Can we talk about Mother Mary, though?
Let's talk about Mother Mary.
Or wait, Camila, do you have something?
No, I don't think I do.
I have to thank Robin and Camila because I've been so busy that I pushed this recording back like 2 weeks. It's been a while. So.
And I thank our listeners for their patience.
Yeah, thank you. Between two 1960s Technicolor curiosities. Camila, did you watch anything else in the past 3 weeks?
Double check. No. Okay. I've been watching Supernatural.
Nice.
Again, Supernatural.
I love the first five seasons of Supernatural, and then the rest I'm kind of like, well, this is fun. I probably stopped around season 7 or 8. Oh,
wow. Mother Mary, how interesting that we transitioned to a movie about a troubled pop star. Who scheduled this?
I know.
Yet it kind of works. Robin?
I loved it. I feel like this is one of those, I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd out of 5, but I feel like this is a movie where if I watch it a few more times, it may well become a 5-star movie. I need to understand it more before I get there because it is so fucking weird.
Yep.
And it's one of those movies where I'm like, I loved this. I don't necessarily recommend it.
Oh, I recommend it.
Okay. It's so fucking bizarre.
It's very odd. It's one of those that's like, is weird supernatural stuff happening or is this all a metaphor? And then by the end, it's like, fuck you for asking. Exactly. That's not the point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The music, I do recommend to everyone. Mm-hmm. If you like Lady Gaga, you will love Shmady Shmaga. The songs are written by FKA Twigs, and they are great. And Anne Hathaway sings them, and she's got the voice for it. Yep. Remember, she won an Oscar for a musical, but she modifies her voice into pop star voice. The sequences in the film that are pop star concert are immaculate.
Really good.
So good. And
it's a concert you would want to be at, which is never the case with a fictional, you know, not if you looked at Vox Lux or that weird.
No, I loved Vox Lux.
That was pretty good.
This movie reminded me so much of Vox Lux. Complimentary.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I wanted to be at the concert for that. The Chicken Smile too.
What is that?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I like that song, those songs.
Anyway, what is that?
Smile 2, the sequel to
Smile. Oh, I never saw that.
Yeah. Anyway.
I heard Chicken Smile 2.
Chicken Smile 2.
Chicken Smile 2.
And I was like, that sounds odd. Michaela Cole, first of all, has a perfect face. Mm-hmm. Her face is perfect. Mm-hmm. Every time she's on screen, I'm like, what am I looking at? Secondly, she's so good. I never watched her show because I found it too upsetting. But
I enjoyed it. The chewing gum one?
I meant I May Destroy You.
Oh.
Yeah. I never watched either of these.
Every facial expression she makes is perfect, and the only thing more perfect is when she doesn't make a facial expression. Stillness is amazing.
There are so many times that Anne Hathaway's crying through 98% of this movie. There's so many times that Anne Hathaway looks at her with tears in her eyes and she's just stone faced. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes! Get her.
She does have a perfect face. Like those fucking that bone structure, those cheekbones.
And I love the character. I loved her character. Mm-hmm. And every scene in that bizarre house was just so captivating. But then I loved the interlude. Like I said, I loved the musical sequences. I loved FKA Twigs' acting scene. Mm-hmm. She's going on my ballot for featured performer. Mm-hmm. I liked Hunter Schafer in this movie. I liked Fleabag's sister in this movie. I'm talking myself up into, why did I only give this 4 stars?
I did 4.5.
Yeah.
We've talked before. I love a movie that could be a play, but is better because it's a movie.
Yes.
Like this all takes, it's basically two of them. And except for like a couple little asides, it mostly takes place in one place.
Yeah.
But because we can get into these David Lowery does magic realism, weird shit sequences.
The scene where she goes down the stairs and then up the stairs and then down the stairs. It's just so the best scene I've seen this year.
And this is a vital, you're probably hearing, oh, indie hit. Interesting. You must see this in a theater.
Please do. Yes, absolutely.
This is as much as a Top Gun, whatever. Like, and you got to see this in the theater.
You will dial in is the thing. Like, I haven't seen in a movie in so long where I never even glanced at my phone time. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I had no care or concern for what time it was. I was just like, I'm watching Mother Mary.
Take me on this journey.
Did we say what it's about?
Doesn't matter.
It's about a struggling pop star who
reconnects with her former costume designer in the most emotionally fraught way possible.
Slash former bestie?
Slash former lover. That is one thing I will say is that this movie could have been gayer.
But I feel like it was gayer for never answering. Like,
okay.
Every minute they don't acknowledge it, you're like, oh, they definitely
did. Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, see it. Ugh. If you're all poo-poo on Michael, guess what? There's counter-programming about it.
Here
available.
Is your alternative. We've been here forever, so I want to hit things briefly, including Lorne, the Lorne Michaels documentary. If you're interested in SNL, there's certainly more to be gleaned from this than there was from the fictional movie Saturday Night.
Sure.
I'm sure. I would hope so.
Everybody's in it. They have a lot to say. There's even one little, like, we may have discovered the origin story that explains Lorne Michaels, kind of tucked in the middle of it, which I won't spoil. But, if you have any passing interest, if you have no interest, probably not. If you have any interest, go for it. Lee Cronin's The Mummy. Fuck off. What are you doing? First of all, who are you? The answer is the guy who did The Evil Dead a couple of years ago, and his name is on the movie because studios actually believe, as a result of the last time this happened, that if you release a movie that's just called The Mummy, people think that Brendan Fraser is going to be in it. And this was a hard R horror movie, and they didn't want that to happen. My response to that is there would have been ways to do that without putting a random stranger's name in front of the title of the film.
Mummy, the Curse.
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not really a mummy movie. It's more...
All the more reason.
Like she's in a sarcophagus, but like...
Sarcophagus, the movie.
Yeah. It's more of an Exorcist, Evil Dead kind of a thing. It's just too gross and angry. It's one of those that is like so upsetting to look at and so dark that I'm like, what? Why are we here?
I saw a screenshot and I was like, no, not for me.
They are playing to my interests. This is probably, I gave a positive review and 3 stars to a movie that has 1.8 on Letterboxd, which is as low as it can get, the Netflix shark movie Thrash.
Oh.
Look, you're appealing to me. But I defy anyone to disagree with this statement. A hurricane has struck a small town. The town is now flooded, and the storm surge accidentally destroyed a tanker truck full of animal blood, thus chumming the water.
Oh.
And now the sharks are in the flooded town. Perfect concept.
You know, I heard that it was basically a Sharknado remake. That's not a Sharknado remake.
No,
that's much more elegant.
Right. That is an elegant. That is lightweight believable. Yeah,
yes.
That's what I'm saying. It verges on something you could buy that could actually happen. After that happens, I just want to see sharks and people trying to get away from sharks from 80 minutes, that's what it did.
That's why anybody goes to see a shark movie.
Yeah.
Right. I did rewatch Jaws this week. Really good movie.
Yeah. holds up all the time. And we should talk about Yumi and Tuscany.
I was just going to say, can we just briefly say Yumi and Tuscany, disappointment for me because I had far too high expectations. Good ROM. The ROM is good. The COM needed work.
It is a movie that walked on the tight. I can think of two examples of this happening. A movie that walked on the tightrope between good and bad. And then there was a line of dialogue so terrible it fell off the tightrope.
Holy Shittily?
No.
Holy Shittily was a big trouble point for me.
when the mostly silent Nona comes in and says, "You want to tap that ass? Tap that ass." Nope, you're a bad movie now.
Oh, Nona.
I also want to say that when I got home, Colin was like, "Were there jokes for black people you didn't get?" And I was like, "No, it was very clearly written by white people." Yeah.
The other time that happened is in the Firestarter remake, which was on that same tightrope. And then she said, "Liar, liar, pants on fire." Nope.
Oh, not a good movie anymore. No.
You got stars in that movie. Halle Bailey was, I liked looking at her.
Oh, and she's so charming and beautiful. And I want to see her in a million more things. And I want there to be more rom-coms in theaters. And this will be fine at home. It's very similar to While You Were Sleeping. Complimentary. Mm-hmm. But like, it's just kind of, it's a little dandelion fluff.
Aww. Yeah, it's one of those, but, I mean, it's a Hallmark movie. It's one of those that's just like, these people just wait here for an hour and a half and they'll work it out.
Yeah, but like, I'm not going to tell you to not watch it. I'm just going to say I was a little let down.
Well, you can wait till it comes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's probably already gone. Because we have not recorded in a while.
Right.
One more I wanted to talk about was Dust Bunny, which I already recommended to the two of you when we were in line for Michael, because there was a line for the screening. The detraction for Dust Bunny is that it has a 3-to-1 aspect ratio. I know. I believe what they... So the premise of the movie is that it's basically their profession...
Taller?
No.
Okay.
Hot dog. All
right. I was picturing a movie shaped like a skyscraper.
No,
like,
that would be 1-to-3.
Right.
It's directed by Brian Fuller, which is apparently his first theatrical feature. And it stars Mads Mikkelsen. And a little girl, he's a hitman, and a little girl hires him to kill the monster under her bed.
Mm.
Okay.
Got a concept.
Metaphorical? Yep.
It's magical realism.
Okay. Well, I like that then.
Yes, I'm telling both of you will like this movie. If you turn it on and you can accept the way that it looks, you will enjoy it. I think what they were trying to do was make it look like peeking under the bed. I think that's the logic behind the aspect ratio, but it is really hard to watch on a home screen. I wish I saw this movie in the theater. Yeah. But it's interesting.
Like the professional, like you said, it was like the professional.
It's the professional, but less creepy and
great.
The monster.
I feel like there's this, that's like, this is a run that we're doing right now. Cause there's another one that's a father and daughter. What is that little boy's name from The Kingsman?
Taron Egerton.
Yes. He's the father and his daughter, like, running around killing people.
Taron Egerton's old enough to be playing fathers.
That's what I'm saying.
Everyone younger than me should not be playing parents.
I know. As I'm like, as I sit, literally just call him that little boy.
Exactly.
You ever have to stop yourself from doing the math game? Like, we were walking through Pitt.
Nope.
And I saw a girl wearing a Linkin Park t-shirt. And I realized that's like me wearing a Sex Pistols t-shirt. Like, slightly before her birth.
Right. It's like, sis, you have never purchased a Linkin Park CD.
You've never purchased a CD. You didn't know that was an option. Taron Egerton's 36.
Oh, wow. Oh, he's good. He's grown up.
He's a grown up. And I also watch Crime 101, which is on Prime right now. Boring.
I started a lot of movies this past couple weeks. That was one of them. I have not gone back to it yet.
Seems like it might play well on an airplane. That's kind of all I got to say.
You're
for
held
it.
Captive.
It's got a fucking phenomenal cast, and they are trying, is the thing. But it just does not come together into anything interesting.
It's a thing that happens sometimes. And a lot of those end up on Prime.
Yeah.
That seems to be like Netflix and Prime. That's how a lot of movies debut on those platforms, which makes it delightful when there's a genuinely good one.
Yeah.
Like Thrash. What did you want, audience? The Great White comes in at the end. It's mostly little. Anyway, let's draw a movie. Where are we? What's happening?
We are doing a traditional draw. And the only veto is in Sean's hands.
Did I veto last time?
No.
Do I still have two? At one point, I had two.
You do have two. See, this is the problem. We have this veto board, and we've already disrupted it. Did you veto last time? You couldn't have vetoed last time.
I don't think
no.
so.
Yeah, you've got two vetoes.
I debated vetoing last time and settled on not, and that feels okay.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I'm not doing it this time. The movie is The X-Files.
Oh, tight!
From 1998.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Wait, I know we'll talk about it again next week, but were you all X-Files with a PH?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No. Is this going to be your first encounter with the IP?
No. I did, I remember way back when I watched one or two episodes of The X-Files, and it was too much for me. Like at that moment in time in my life, I was like, no, thank you. I'm moving on with my life. And then I think last year I started trying to watch from the beginning. It's been slow going and we can talk about it next time, but seeing David Duchovny in concert.
Mm.
Like strum. I didn't realize he did that.
They all do that.
Yeah.
Is it a white male actor 50 and up? Assume they're on tour. Who did I get an angry
with? Kevin Bacon just here?
Yeah.
The Bacon Brothers.
I got an angry note once from, I think it wasn't Kevin Costner. It was Dennis Quaid. I got an angry note from Dennis Quaid's people because the two lines I wrote about him coming to town were, he does music too. And they were like, I think you should really come to the show and see what this is all about. I'm like, I didn't even make the jokey jokes about it. I just said he's an actor.
Right.
You know him as an actor, which is true.
Wow. It's like a little sensitive, are we? How about
Wait, did they send you a ticket?
You should come see what
they
he
offered.
Does.
I didn't take it.
All right.
You know who I saw was Gary Sinise, and that was pretty good.
All right.
Yeah. It's nice. It's the Lieutenant Dan band, and he mostly does veterans things, and it's all covers. Oh. They sound like a wedding band.
Bless.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. What does this have to do with the X-Files? I have so much to say about the X-Files. I will save it for next
time. I don't
think
I knew this about you. Did you know this about me? That I loved that show?
And I assumed it about Sean, but I didn't know it about you.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched every episode because...
neither have I.
Beyond a certain point, you're like... I'm good.
Yeah.
But the best X-Files episode. It was very influential.
In fact, I will be watching so many episodes to go along with this.
Yeah, same now. I'm going to hop back on that train.
Yeah.
I think I made it to the first season.
I don't know whether or not to tell you to go. I don't know whether or not to go for the jugular. I don't know whether to tell her to watch Home or not.
Which one's Home? It is the first episode that I was not allowed to watch.
Is it the one where it's like the half thing is like scurrying around?
No.
Okay, that's the one that scared the bejesus out of me that I watched.
No. It was a very hefty parental discretion advised. Oh. And my dad issued a incredibly rare parental discretion. And I was not allowed to watch it. And we did have a screaming fight about that.
Season 4, episode 2.
It wasn't in syndication for a while.
Exactly.
And a lot of the commercials leading up were Fox basically trying to tell you, like,
don't watch this.
We're pretty sure this is too fucked up. We have to. You shouldn't watch this.
right, I'll watch that one.
Yeah,
it completely stands alone. Like,
I was just going to say, one thing that's so great about the X-Files is, even though I had this incredibly complex mythology, when you watch the standalone episodes, you can just watch any episode from anywhere in the series, and it works as its own piece of entertainment.
Right on. I want to do it right now.
Okay,
I have
all right.
So much to do.
Next episode, we're very excited for this.
Yeah.
Music.
One more story.
How long have we been recording to save it from having to do this? Oh, that's not so bad.
I still think the moment that my father was the most embarrassed of me. It was me and him, and I was playing a little league game, and I had told my mother to tape the X-Files. And I was convinced she was going to forget. So I, when I was in the dugout, I left the playing field to go try to convince him to go find a phone, like at the concession stand or something, to call home and make sure that mom had taped the X-Files.
So did she?
She did.
Oh, good for her.
But because he was adamant that this was a dumb thing to ask and do, it looked from a distance like he was berating me for striking out in the previous
I'm sorry.
Don't remember which episode it was either.
I hope it was a good one.
It was one of the big mythology ones.
Okay.
We're going to reveal everything. They never reveal everything. and then they contradict it later. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying went to number one on March 22nd of 1967. What was the number one song in America?
The Beatles.
Correct.
Oh. Strawberry Fields?
Not my favorite Beatles song, but very pleasant.
Lucy in the Sky.
No.
Strawberry Fields.
More pleasant.
Sergeant Pepper.
More
Here
pleasant.
Comes the Sun.
More pleasant.
Oh. About as pleasant as Here Comes the Sun, but no. We're a little early for Here Comes the
Tomorrow
Sun.
Tomorrow right? never knows, or nobody knows.
No.
We're a little early. There's only like 2 years left.
Yeah.
More pleasant than Sergeant Pepper, and about as pleasant as Here Comes the Sun.
Pure pop.
Pure pop. This is the 60s.
Here comes Late, but it's 67?
Mm-hmm.
What album is it?
I want to say it's Abbey Road.
That's not going to help me. I never owned that one.
Not the White Album, I'll tell you that. I mean, the only two that I know track for track are the White Album and Let It Be.
Ticket to Ride.
Ooh.
This was a non-album single.
Oh.
Strawberry Fields was the B-side.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Paperback Writer.
Jude.
Nope.
What is a Blackbird?
I'm not giving you hints on a Beatles number one.
You're, yeah, you
one
should.
Of, one
There's
of
like
getting there eventually.
30 of those, Sean. Narrow it down.
Eleanor Rigby?
No, we're all around it time-wise.
Penny Lane.
There you go.
Hey!
See, I told you I didn't need to help.
You just name every fucking Beatles song that you know.
Yeah, it'll take an hour. We're already late.
We're just going to be here. Just let it wash over you.
Mm. Let it be?
Let it be.